Good morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cruttenden and I'm here with co-host Jeff Pitino.
How are you?
And once again, talking about history, ancient cultures, the character and nature of these cultures. And that brings us to our speaker today. Howard Falco had an experience that some ancient cultures have hinted at and talk about to some degree through texts and scripture and that sort of thing. And so we want to hear about that experience and hear where it's taken Howard in his life. So, Jeff, can you give a little background on Howard?
I'd be happy to. Howard attended Arizona State University, graduated with a degree in business in 1989, and shortly afterwards entered the financial world as an investment manager. In August of 2002, shortly after his 35th birthday, something rather remarkable happened to him. It was the first of two events that he now describes as peak experiences. These were extensive and astonishing shifts in awareness that happened instantaneously. Startled at what happened, and having little prior knowledge of religion, spirituality, or quantum physics, he set out to research the phenomenon. Since that period in his life, it has been his desire to honor the information he learned by offering it to others who are interested in achieving peace in their own lives.
Terrific. And Howard, I see you go by Howie. Is it okay to call you Howie?
Absolutely.
Good. That was my best friend's name growing up. Hey, so tell us, what was kind of going on in your life before you had this experience, and then let's get into it.
Sure. Ironically enough, everything was going fine. I was at a place where I was at peace, really, with my family. I had two small children, which I still do. A wife that I had pictured when I was young, the woman that I wanted to marry, I was married to in a very balanced and great relationship, which I still have. And I was content with work at the time. But yet, there wasn't that final and convincing state of peace inside. There was always this unsettledness and this need to do more, to be more, to have more. And I thought at first it was because I needed to work harder to make millions of dollars so that I could do more things in my life. And one day I realized that I was in big trouble because I had everything in my life that money couldn't buy. So I got frightened because I thought, well, what else is there if it isn't to just make more money? Why don't I have that state of peace right now? And that's when I began, or that's when I actually stopped at one very poignant moment in my home and just asked and just said, hey, I want to know, what is the answer to all this? Why are we here? What's the point of all this? And why haven't I reached that state of contentment and peace?
But did you have a religion or a philosophy that you were adhering to at the time?
No, I grew up under a religion, but I never was really connected to it. So I had a very open mind on it. I had never made any decisions on what the nature of anything related to the word G-O-D or what God was. I never really put a box around any of that, so I was open. I was just going through life in a very sort of curious state. But at this moment, I had run out of answers on this particular issue, and that's when I asked the question. Because I saw the wheel that I was on with work and what I would have to do and the weight that I was carrying on my shoulders.
So you mentally asked this question in sort of your
quiet times,
huh?
Well, I actually physically stopped in the middle of the hallway because it struck me to such a profound level that that I just stopped right there and I just said, okay, I'm ready. What is the answer to this? I want to know right now. And I asked that in my mind or to the universe or to whatever your idea of God is, but I just asked that question out. And then I let it go, and I went back into my life. And a couple weeks later, one of the things I do for work or did for work is I trade the stock market, the equity markets on a daily basis. And a guy had written a fascinating book on the psychological nature of trading markets and how we react to markets based on how we perceive them and how we interpret them as far as what opportunity we make out of that situation. And so I went to the seminar, and in there was one point he was talking about the nature of our beliefs as it related to the stock market, but I wasn't seeing it like that. I was seeing this being an answer to the question that I asked weeks ago, or at least the beginning of that answer. Mm. And in that moment, I realized that this sense of perfection that I was searching for all of my life that would bring peace was already there. And all I had to do was realize it. And when that happened, it was as if a bunch of dominoes fell in my mind. And I entered this state of bliss that I never knew before. I kind of had an experience of it when my two children were born. But this trumped that. And it lasted for about a week where I don't care what would have happened in my life, it wouldn't have bothered me.
And it first started there at the seminar?
Well, the questioning started where I had these beliefs that I had held since I can remember that started to dissolve. A belief related to the way things were in the world. I saw that regret, for example, that the concept of regret is a complete illusion. Because regret is a tool, a manipulative tool that we use in our mind to prevent us from doing something in the future. But it actually works the opposite way. Because if we're holding on to regret, we haven't truly accepted the truth of the past moment that we acted in. We're saying, I should have, or I could have, or I would have done better in that past moment. All there is what you did. And all it waits for is you to accept it to be freed from it so that you no longer sit with that idea of regret. Because if you feel an idea of regret in your brain, you're saying, I am regretful. And since the most powerful statement you can ever make in your mind is I am, that ends up becoming your future.
So this experience then was an awakening that you said set off these dominoes, and this sort of realization was one of the dominoes. Then, huh?
That's correct. And what happened was after I came out of the state, I had no idea what this was, and I said, you know, I've got to find out what this is about. And I was curious, what do people call this? Has anybody in history ever had this experience? And I went out to kind of search a little bit about what was out there. And, you know, having never studied religion or philosophy while I was in college, it was interesting to me. And 4 months later, I had a second experience. And it was in the second experience that everything truly changed. And the second experience took me over 2 years to fully understand, embrace, and most importantly, accept that it occurred. Because in the first experience, I understood more about myself, which freed me to a certain state of peace and bliss. The second experience, I came to a great understanding for myself of everything in the entire world, or maybe in the universe. Although I don't proclaim to know have all the answers, but it certainly was a tremendous amount of insight that was overwhelming. And if you'd like, I mean, I could share what happened in the second experience if you'd
like.
Please
do, yes.
Okay. I had learned in this period how you can ask a question and the answer is simultaneously born upon the question. So time then becomes your pacing of the allowance of that answer into your awareness. So we ask a question, the answer exists, and then time becomes how long it takes for us to let that in. Because when we let that answer in, it's going to change who we are. And it's going to change the way we look at ourselves and the world. So as I started to do this and realize how fascinating this was, that you could get the answer if you were open to it, 4 months later in December, I was sitting in my office at work, and all of a sudden, I got an answer. And I said, wow, that's really amazing, and I wrote it down. And then all of a sudden, another answer, and then another answer. And they were coming in very rapidly, and they seemed to be coming from the top. It was like, the way I explained it to people, it's like when you go outside and the first raindrop hits your head, and it's this big, heavy raindrop, and it hits you right in the center of the head,
right.
And then a second raindrop, and then a third raindrop, and then before you know it, it's pouring. And that's exactly what this experience was like. I got an insight, I got another one, and before I knew it, I had to drop the pen because I couldn't get it out on paper as fast as it was coming in. And I stood up, and I just left work. I got in my car. I had no idea where I was going. I ended up parked at the public library. I got out. I literally followed my feet, and I ended up in the library and ended up in the spiritual and religious and philosophy section of the library. And I looked up on the shelf, and whatever book stood out sort of jumped out at me, I grabbed. Confucius, grabbed it. Buddha, grabbed it. The New Testament of Christ, grabbed it. Some Freud, grabbed it. Some works of Plato, grabbed them. Stuff I had never really read before, or maybe a page or two or a line or two. And I took this stack and went to the back part of the library and just started to open it and look through it. And it, wherever I put my finger down, wherever I put my thumb down, it didn't matter. That information was, for some amazing, astonishing reason, known information. It was no longer had to be deciphered, encoded. It was basically Chinese to me. The minutes or hours before, it was now understandable, recognizable, and at that moment, the back part of my legs came out. I hit the floor in a very humbling, overwhelmingly, it's hard to put it into words, the feeling, but and I cried there in the library. And that experience took me over 2 years to fully understand it, embrace it, integrate it, and accept it. And the acceptance part was interesting because for two solid years, my brain, every time I thought, wow, this is an amazing thing that occurred, my brain tried to say to me, yeah, who do you think you are, buddy? You know, I mean, this information isn't for, you know, you. I mean, are you crazy? And so the watershed moment or the breakthrough point was when I finally realized that this information is not for anybody special. It's for everybody. And when I realized that, I had no problem accepting it anymore, and that's the day I decided I was going to honor it by writing about all that became known in my interpretation of it or in my way of understanding it.
Right. So you had
I sat down to write.
Yeah, what a beautiful experience. So you actually just got on your knees there right in the library, huh?
Well, I didn't get on my knees. The back of my knees actually gave way. It wasn't that I just said I'm going to go to my knees. I just dropped because of the overwhelming nature of, I think, at that moment, of what I was experiencing, the humility, it's truly beyond words. And to speak about it, you know, evokes an incredible place of emotion because it's such an overwhelming moment. But what I realized had happened was, looking back now, is that in this process of learning how to accept an answer, time had collapsed at that moment in December of 2002 for me, where it was as if, I guess, you might call it a simultaneous awareness, where there was no time delay between question and answer. And so that's how I look back at it. And in writing the book, you know, I just sat down and said, okay, allow me to let this come out on paper to the most amount of people who are interested in this information and what it represents for them in their lives. And that's what the process of writing the book was.
Excellent. And I understand you're almost ready to bring that book out?
That's correct. Hopefully, looking at maybe the first or second quarter of 2009. It shouldn't be later than the second quarter of 2009.
My
intention.
And what are you going to call it?
The name of the book is I Am, and the subtitle is The Power of Discovering Who You Really Are.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, you know, seems like lately we're hearing about more and more people that have had not that exact experience, but similar awakening moments. And it's almost like something's going on in the world,
mm-hmm.
based on the number of people at least we're running into. We just came back from our annual conference on precession last week, and a lot of people there were talking about epiphanies that they've had and how they're beginning to embrace ancient knowledge more rather than just sort of believing what they're taught in school and hear on the news, which is a pretty limited view of things.
Right, right. I mean, this information is not new. It has been coming since the beginning of human consciousness. It's just been coming in different modes, different ways, through different cultures, different contexts. But it's been coming, and many people are ready for it now in this way and in the way we live in this society that's most effective. Because I think that can be an issue sometimes with ancient knowledge, is that we don't fully know or understand the context of the delivery of information back then. And so a lot of times ancient texts are misinterpreted.
Yeah, well, there's some beautiful stories about different contexts of delivery, like the Oracle at Delphi in ancient Greece, or the saints and sages of India. Or, you know, the experiences of the monks wandering the Egyptian desert, you know. But yours was in a library in Arizona, at least that's...
That's right, yeah, it was in a library in Arizona. And that's one of the great messages, is that sometimes we get so involved in story that our mind sort of has an idea that it embraces about how it has to come and who it has to come to. And the more you embrace that, the more you separate yourself from that experience. And the great message is that it can come at any single moment, even this one. And so I think that can offer great hope. And that's my great message, is that, look, I'm a married father of two, with a wife, kids, a job, a mortgage. You know, I'm the guy next door. And if it can happen to me, I think that offers great hope. And a lot of times some of the teachers that we have, wonderful, fantastic teachers around the world, but sometimes their resume can end up being a hindrance to the audience, because the audience can tend to, not in all cases, but can tend to separate themselves because of that resume.
Right. Yeah, that can happen to them, but not to me.
Yeah. Right.
How has your personal life and what you do for a living changed since your experiences?
It's a great question. My personal life has been fantastic. This energy of this experience and the information has resonated out and has been reflected back, as all things do, in my personal universe and the people that I deal with. And so there's been a flow, a beautiful flow that's occurred because of that. My wife, after finally realizing a few months in that I wasn't going to disappear onto a mountain, has been my biggest cheerleader and supporter. So that's been great. Work's been tough only because, you know, we are in this system of economics where in order to maintain your life economically, you need to bring in an income. So there's a transition period here where, because my desire is so strong to at least present this information on a daily basis, that my old job, which I've pared back quite a bit, but I'm still doing, can be tough at times compared to delivering this material or to at least offering it to those who are interested. And that's really the future path for me. But that's how it, so the transition's going along, but there seems to be a nice flow with this. And at first, I'll tell you that there was, people were a little concerned because of the dramatic nature of the change. But again, anytime anything in the universe changes the energy that it puts out, things become a little discombobulated around it until they decide to retune to it, whether it's planets or people or stars. As soon as that energy shifts, it creates a shift in everything around it. So there was a little bit of unsettledness at first, but everybody is...
They thought you were going off the deep end, and they realized, hey, he's okay.
Right, exactly. This didn't change who I am ultimately.
I had an experience when I was about 13 years old, which is just indescribable, and I'm still learning about it to this day.
Mm-hmm.
As my awareness expands, I realize how deep this thing was. And it was one of these things. I had just come up from the beach and was brushing the sand off my feet, about to go in my door, and, you know, could suddenly felt one with the universe and could see through all the walls and knew everything. And that's only the part I can describe.
Right.
The part I can't describe was even the better part.
Right.
I went and told my mom, and she felt my head and said, you know, you're feeling okay.
Yeah.
And looking back, that's the time I started to read, you know, about esoteric matters and ancient cultures and that sort of thing. But it took me years to realize that that was a turning point in my life.
Yep.
So it's great that you've realized yours so quickly. And we want to hear, you know, about what you're doing with it. But we just have a minute left here. So first, let's see, you have a website that people can find out a little bit about you, Howard?
Yeah, it's www.truthserum.net.
Okay. And the book is expected to be out when?
First or second quarter of next year.
Okay.
But there's some information on the site, and there's some downloads and podcasts, different information they can find on the site.
Terrific. Okay, well, we're talking with Howard Falco. This is The Cosmic Influence, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. We're talking with Howard Falco. And so, Howard, you've been given this incredible gift, this insight that puts life in perspective. And what are you going to do with it?
Well, what I've done with it is I spent 2.5-3 years writing a book. I put out a website. And anybody who's interested, I'll offer them what I've come to understand as it relates to what they're looking to understand, just like what we're doing right now. So that's what I plan on doing for the rest of my life with it, because I'm so incredibly excited about what this represents for those who are interested in it and how it can dramatically change their life and the way they look at life and the way they look at themselves and their understandings in general about the nature of life in all aspects.
And so give me some specifics on, you know, how is the – why is it important information? How is it relevant to me?
Well, I think anybody who's – it depends on where you're at in your life. It's relevant to you based on where you want to go and what you want to accomplish. If you've got some challenges in your life or you're facing a situation that you want to change or you want to heal or you want to understand better, then that's how it represents – that's what it represents to you in your life. If you're looking to just understand more about your particular field, there may be some answers in there as well for anybody who's looking to do that. So it's relevant to each individual and what they're trying to experience. There's some great messages, some, I guess, broader macro messages in the overall understanding. And if I'll just jump right into one of them here. But
please.
The basic one is that death is truly an illusion. We see it all around us in everything that we experience, people, plants, animals, planets, solar systems. But yet, ask yourself, have you ever experienced it yourself? Have you ever known yourself to be anything but alive? And I don't think anybody can answer that question. So at least it leaves the door open to the possibility of what I'm offering, which is that we are the eternal observer, each one of us. And without us, this really doesn't exist. So we have to survive. It's not a question of if we're going to survive, if we're going to live, but the question is how we're going to choose to move through the experience and the journey that we're on. So that's one of the great understandings that came through, and that another one is that each one of us, based on our interpretation of what we see, based on our beliefs, is making everything what it is, which means that based on our interpretation of what we experience, we're creating whether it's good or bad, and whether it creates negative or positive energy within us, thus leading to suffering or joy.
You know, the first one, I've thought of a near-death experience. Obviously, nobody alive can tell you what death is like other than those people that have experienced it for very short periods of time.
But let me jump in here a second, Walter. But, I don't mean to interrupt you.
But their experience is that they're not dead.
Right. Okay. There you go. I'm sorry. You were right on that track. That's exactly right. If they're experiencing it, then
yeah,
they're aware of it and they're
exactly
observing it as a conscious observer.
Right.
So what they may be experiencing is a transitory nature of the physical, maybe to some would call the spiritual, but the physical to another nature of our beingness.
Right. I know the world may say, oh, you were clinically dead for 7 minutes and we were trying to do that. And the person says, well, I was off somewhere and I had these trips and visions and I saw you working on my heart, so I thought I'd come back.
Right. And the experience is universal the description of it.
Thousands and thousands.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
And my dad's wife had a near-death experience when she was a child, and she doesn't talk about it much, but she spoke to me about it once, and it was identical to what I had read or seen, heard from other people.
Okay, so this realization of our ongoing eternity state of awareness is really a part of your viewpoint now.
Right. That's what I came to experience through this. And again, with no background in spirituality or religion, but that's what I came to know and understand. And the reason that's so important, that understanding, is it takes away the need for I and makes it we. And that is a dramatic shift in the way that you view the world and the way that you interact with it. because the need for I, what some would call ego, is what can create a tremendous amount of suffering, because you see that your attachments or your beingness in the world is related to things that are outside of you. Therefore, when these things change, or when people pass away, or when business shifts, there's suffering. But when you see that you are greater than all these outside attachments, then you can move through it with more, in a more fluid manner,
mm-hmm.
in a shorter time frame or experience of time. Because time is, again, based on resistance.
Yeah, speaking of that, then, why do you think this happened to you at this age, 35, would you?
Yeah, that's a great question, and one I've asked many, many times. And the only answer that I continually get or come to is simply that I was ready for it, ready to drop the identities that I had held on to since that age, no longer fear dropping those identities, and opened up to a much more expansive idea. And I think for a lot of people, that they hold tightly to their identity because they fear what it means to let go of it. They're not sure what that unknown is. Even if that identity is creating a tremendous amount of suffering in them, they still hold on to it because it's known. And what the mind fights is the unknown. The mind wants to know, because to know is to know that you're alive and that you exist. And that's the core intent behind everything in the universe, is to exist. So that can be feared until you realize that by opening up, you're going to exist in a much more greater and expansive manner. So to answer your question specifically, Walter, that is one question that I stopped asking it a little while ago, because I was more focused on honoring it. And the why didn't matter anymore. I just accepted that it did occur. But the best answer I could give you is that because I was ready.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, when you have something profound happen to you, or some awakening, you don't want to question the gift too much. You want to enjoy it and appreciate it for everything.
Right, and I did do that for 2 years. Remember, my mind tried to tell me, you know, I'm sorry, but... Howie, people are going to think you're crazy. Who do you think you are? And the big understanding was that it's for everybody. It's not for just, you know, it doesn't make me special. It's exciting because I can hold up a torch. It might light other torches in the world. So my intent was just to offer it out to anybody interested.
Good. Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. Howard, what role do you see history playing in our personal evolution?
The role I see it playing is whatever role each one of us decides to have it play. So however important it is to each individual is what role it's going to end up playing. But I think from a bigger level, the role that it plays is to leave us a mark of where we've been, so that we can reflect on that and more better decide who we want to be going forward. And so we can learn a great amount from what we've created based on who we've been in the past as a collective consciousness, if you will, or as a humanity, and decide what we want to do from there going forward. And everybody has a different place they like to look in history to get that information, or what they like to attach to, but I see it as a foundation to build upon.
Do you have an example of someone who, like, where that applied, like how their history, like, affected their evolution?
You mean as far as a person in history? Well, I think
yourself. Is there some? Has this turned you more to looking at specific religions? You mentioned that moment in the book, and are there any religious philosophies or anything that you've sort of embraced? Has history affected you in some way then?
The only way it's affected me is it helped in the confirmation process that this was real. But there isn't any one specific way that I look back at and say this is right or this is wrong. I just see it all for what it was at that time being offered by those who came to a greater sense of awareness and tried to pass that awareness on to the people around them at that time. So that's the only way I see it, but as far as one being better than the other or an attachment to one or the other, no. a great reference point and a great way to make points and deliver information based on who I'm talking to. If I'm talking to someone deep-seated in religion that wants to understand this, I may talk about a parable in a different light maybe than they've been taught to offer them potentially a more enriching meaning from it. It's up to them. Or if I'm talking to someone who's deep in philosophy, I might use the works of one of the great philosophers to offer a point. So that's the way that I see it or I look upon it.
Have you incorporated then or any philosophies into your own life? Do you practice yoga or meditation or anything?
I think meditation is great, and certainly it can be a great source to find an immediate sense of balance and rejuvenation. So I think meditation's great. I think yoga's great. I haven't practiced any yoga, although every single person I talk to says, "Oh, you got to do it," but I haven't practiced it yet. But I see it for what it is, and I totally accept it and see the meaning behind it. But no, there isn't any particular thing that I guess if I'm answering your question correctly that I've attached to.
Yeah, I was just wondering if the experience has had some outward changes in terms of.
Well, the outward change that I would say that is most relevant is that I see every human being and every circumstance that enters my existence is offering me something. I see the perfection in all of life, and I see that it's always presenting me with an opportunity to decide how I'm going to interact with what's going on, what I'm going to see or take from it, how it relates to questions that I've asked in my life.
So you see everything as more synchronous now. And
everything is. There isn't anything that's happening at any given moment in your life that isn't for you. This moment is for each one of us, all for different reasons, but there's a perfect synchronicity in what's going on for all the listeners, for the three of us, for what's happening right now. And that happens at each moment of your life. So I've seen the beauty and the perfection of it and really the love.
I'm reviewing a book right now, and it's about time phenomena. And one of them is, for some people, whenever they look at the clock, it's 11:11 or 2:22 or 3:33 or whatever.
Yep.
And it's not so much that there's anything in that specific number, the clock mechanically, but the idea that the person relates something to that.
Exactly right.
Yeah, and I had this happen to me just the other day. I was listening to a story on the radio about a guy who was skydiving. His chute didn't open, and he fell thousands of feet, hit the ground, and managed to live. And then he goes on and tells this incredible story how they thought he was going to be a vegetable, and then they thought he'd never walk, and now he runs triathlons. And so I was searching. I was asking myself, how did he do this? This is a miracle. And just as the guy says Kriya Yoga, which is one of the keys, I believe, to life and some practice that I use, the clock says 11:11. And so to me, it just sort of emphasized that, aha, that's what I was looking for, and made it seem a bit more important. So anyway, your viewpoint on life gives it a lot more meaning to you right now, sounds like.
Yeah, I realize what each moment is, and it's a process of my own expansion and evolution of the understanding of who I am and what I'm capable of creating for myself through this journey. With a sense of radical honesty as I approach every day about my actions and about what comes out of my mouth and about what comes out through my interactions with people, always as a reflection of who I am. And so I'm always offered that opportunity to ask that question, who am I and who do I want to be?
Yeah, that's, are you familiar with Ramakrishna?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, that was his whole philosophy. You know, mm-hmm. You really don't have to do anything. Just keep asking yourself that same question over and over again.
Well, yes, you really don't have to do anything, except for there is something within all of us that drives us to create. And if you get to the point where you don't have to create, that's fine too. But there is this sense of movement that's always going on. And when we don't feel that we're moving with it, we tend to get discontent until we create something new again, or we get back in lock and step with it. Because as we all know, the only constant is change.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Howie, how has your experience, how is it related to information that's been left for us by ancient cultures? I know you mentioned earlier that in one of your second peak experience, you ended up reading a lot about ancient philosophy and cultures. How did that impact your experience, and how is that related to the information that they've left for us?
Well, what it did during the process was it helped me to confirm what I had come to know, and to see that it had been presented for thousands of years. So that was the big impact that ancient cultures and ancient texts had on me in my life.
Did you say, aha, I'm not alone? This is
right, because a lot of questions come up when this information happens. And so when you see that there's been confirmation from other people throughout history, through the process anyways, it was very comforting. So, but I think that the role that it plays is to help bring more people to this understanding. And as they read ancient texts and they struggle with it, there's a reason for it. It's because they're learning discernment. They're learning to understand what is real and what has sort of been manufactured or trying to be molded in order to keep a belief that you've held for a long time intact. Because the beliefs that we have, they fight for their survival because they're part of our identity. And the ego tries to hold on to these beliefs because it wants to know that that's what's real. But so when you're presented with new information that challenges these beliefs, a lot of times what's written in these texts can be rationalized or judged rather than discerned for what they're really offering, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes a lot of sense, and that's one of the big problems with the world today. I mean, there's beauty and truth in really every religion. Mm-hmm. You know, these are core wisdom teachings here, and yet people, you know, bend them, twist them, or don't see the merit in them because something going on in their own head or their own dramas.
Correct. They're trying to serve themselves in order. They're trying to serve the belief rather than expand the awareness. And they will serve the belief and continue to ask the question until they're ready to let go of the belief and expose themselves to something new where the mind can stretch and the awareness can grow.
Yeah.
And so these great ancient texts that have been left for thousands of years are wonderful tools for everybody, depending on whatever you're attracted to help you on this journey, this never-ending journey of expanding awareness.
There was a student who had asked Paramahansa Yogananda, said, "I believe in God, but he doesn't help me." And Yogananda answered, "Belief in God and faith in God are different. Belief is valueless if you don't test it and live by it. Belief converted into experience becomes faith. That is why the prophet Malachi told us, 'Prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it.'" Sounds like you got one of those blessings.
Yeah, which I'm eternally grateful for. But what's interesting about what you said is that you're right. It's faith is through the action of it. It's not through the mental understanding of it. It's not through a pragmatic reading of it. It's through the actual beingness of it That is where the faith is, and it's the only thing the universe can respond to is who you are being, not who you think you are, but who you are actually being in every moment. That is the truth of it, and that is what requires the faith. But we live in a giant reflective mirror that can only give us the nature of who we believe we are. So individually, if you look at your individual life, you'll see that reflection. If you look at us collectively as a humanity, you'll see that reflection. But in changing who you are, you change the world around you.
Right. Yeah, we change the way we perceive things and think of things. I was at Jeff and I actually both went to UCI this morning to a little seminar. A Sufi guy giving a talk on that relates to digital media.
Yeah, he was relating each of the chakras to different technologies.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, you know, he was trying to put his two lives together. You know, he wasn't an investment manager that had this divine experience. He was a digital media guy that had this divine experience, and that's how he put them together, identifying each of the chakras with some telecommunications technology. And I just thought, what a unique way to see the world.
Yeah.
Then we were sitting at a table. There was a physicist, Manu, at the table, and he was telling us not to think. Did you catch that, Jeff?
I did.
Yeah. He said, just no. Don't think.
And that becomes easier when you start to question what you think about. Because when you question what you think about, you can get the answer as to why you're thinking about it. And that eventually dissolves the question, which takes you to a state of no thinking. And that's what a lot of the book is about, the process of systematically understanding the nature of who we are, where it takes away the questions, and the more questions you take away, the more space there is for nothing, which is the peace, which is that eternal essence or that moment.
So is the book then offering a specific process to achieve that realization, or more your...
Well, I think the book itself is the process. There isn't a step-by-step formula. There is a part one, what am I, which goes into three different areas. There's a part two, how am I, how you look at the universe, how you experience who you are, how you create your state of mind. Part three was why am I, why I have emotions, why I have need and addiction, why I haven't experienced what I desire yet, and why I have resistance and fear of change. And then part four is who you can be with this information, which is based on your desire to ask questions, accept answers, make new choices, and take action. And it sounds simple, and at the essence, all things are laughably simple or amazingly simple, but it goes into a more practical look at our lives through each of these steps in the book or parts in the book that leads to a greater understanding.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Things are simple, but sometimes we just have to get out of the way. And right now, we have to wrap up this show. So
okay.
I want to thank you for being on it, Howard. And,
my pleasure.
And remind everybody your website is
www.truthserum.net.
Great, great. So thanks again for being on Cosmic Influence. Hope to talk to you again real soon.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Once more, if you want more information on the research that we do here at BRI, you can find us on our website, www.binaryresearchinstitute.org. And please do check out our past episodes. They're available both on iTunes and on our website. And
we're always looking, too, for new people we can interview, people that have an interesting perspective on life and history, and that can help us better understand particularly the wisdom of ancient cultures.
Yes, and if you do have someone that you'd like to hear us interview, please go ahead and email us their name at connect@binaryresearchinstitute.org.
Or walter@thegreatyear.com.
In the meantime,
bring on the higher ages.